Dan Ball, something you'd like to contribute?
Yes, thank you. This hour of afternoons is brought to you by FindMassMoney.gov, Andy. Just wanted you to know.
Wow. That seemed like a Kendrick Bourne. That's not knowing where you're supposed to line up to start the play. I don't know if you guys have followed Kendrick Bourne's career. The guy has no idea, like 8 years into the NFL, on any given play, where he's supposed to line up. The other day, the entirety of the offense looked to their right, which was sort of where the camera was coming from, and they're all yelling at Bourne where to move to line up, and he's like, me? Wait, what?
Oh, yeah, Juwan Jennings was losing his mind on the other side of the line, yeah.
How can you be that far into your career? And this is a thing. This happened a lot with the Patriots.
He's too busy vibing half the time.
I don't know. Or maybe that power station, like, diminishes your recall. So he's, like, learning the playbook, but then those forces from that power station. Ted, you seem like a new agey guy in some ways.
I am, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Power stations cause injuries, truth or fiction?
Oh, I'm not that new agey. I don't know the answer to that one. That seems a little far-fetched to me.
It's like a brewing, but now I've seen some of these NFL docs,
the data, you know,
these Twitter doctors are like, I don't really buy it, but it is possible.
Yeah.
And I was like, so you're saying that it could be a thing with the Niners?
This is all garbage. They just need a Dr. Franke. That's all I was adding. They just need somebody who can work out the bumps and bruises. That's all. Sorry, Fitz, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, I'll follow any new age, new wave, crazy wormhole conspiracy theory for a while. A power station weakening ligaments? Come on. That's beyond next level.
I also think almost every year in the NFL, there's a team that has just, oh my God, I can't believe how snake-bitten they are. They have another, are they all next to power stations? Do they all have fields and locker rooms and practice fields next to power stations? I find that.
I always feel bad for the strength coaches because they're the ones that get blamed. The coaches put a lot on the strength coaches as if it's their fault.
Right.
Guys, if there's a rash of injuries, it's the strength coaches' fault.
The bench presses that you did in the spring relate to the torn ACL in October directly. Although with the power thing, I will say, have you guys ever been like, yeah, but he grew up under power lines? I definitely said that as a kid. Like, I would make fun of kids that grew up under power lines. So,
well, you're cruel.
Maybe there's something that's said to it. It's 5:06:17. Stiz, time for The Drive.
This is The Drive.
Swings and drives one. High and deep. In the left field. Gone!
The top stories, stats, and quotes from around the sports world for your ride home. WEEI Afternoons.
This drive home is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Before we get into Mark Schlereth, I do, Fitzy, I always laugh every time we hear this open and they talk about driving 55. And as you've noted on my ride home on 24, if you're doing 55, well, you might as well be walking compared to the rest of traffic. Because unless there's traffic slowing down, everybody's doing 80 on 24.
Who does 55 anywhere now?
Yeah, that's probably true.
Best stretch of highway in the city? Can you guys come up with one?
No. What's your favorite?
I think about this.
Route 2.
Route 2, bro!
Oh, yeah.
Route 2!
Yeah.
Route 2. That's it, Stiz. Right as you leave the city and you're going, what is that, west, out towards the burbs, that stretch between the city and like 128 is the best stretch of highway.
I used to ride that a lot, to and from Tufts.
Open that up a little bit.
That's the way, this is when you're on the bike?
On the bike.
I like,
watch out.
I like 25 and 195, either going from the Cape to New Bedford or back. If it's not too crowded, it's a nice, easy stretch.
Except for those skinny little bridges they make you cross that are 150 years old and are being held up by duct tape and toothpicks. So we talked to Mark Schlereth earlier in the show. He had a lot of thoughts on a lot of things, but we're getting into this early. I like this, by the way, playoff games. Normally during the regular season, it's like Wednesday we start to talk about the opponent. But in the postseason, baby, it's like Chargers game over. You advanced. It's time to talk about the opponent. So, Ted, if I said you, the Patriots have a big advantage against the Texans, what would it be? What can you come up with? What would their biggest advantage against the Texans be?
They have the best quarterback would be number one.
Mm-hmm.
The external factors that I mentioned earlier, the fact that they added all the travel is number two, and they have a short week. That would be number two. I think the Patriots have the coaching advantage. That's number three.
So, got a bunch of them. I only asked for one.
Yeah,
but
no,
I'm
trying to. I'm kissing up to the teacher.
Do you think the coaching advantage is that great? Like D'Amico, I mean Harbaugh's a good coach too, but D'Amico Ryan's rarely seems to get outcoached. He's like seems to be one of the most involved guys. Like he does. You talk about no naps, Ted.
It's not only Vrabes, but I just look at all the assistants under him, all that institutional knowledge that all the guys bring from all their various stints with the NFL, you know, teams. So I doubt that the Texans, I haven't looked at their O-line coach, has 34 years of NFL experience like Doug Marrone, Thomas Brown, former head coach. There's just on and on and on. The Patriots, I just think, as a whole, staff is going to be a better coaching staff than what the Texans bring.
And I don't even go that deep because I agree with you, Fitzy. It's interesting because you have two former linebackers. They actually both have been in the Texans organization in various roles. Like, there's some similarities. I think the biggest advantage, and it pains me to say this because I like this guy. I actually advocated for this guy to come here. But to me, the Josh McDaniels, Nick Caley matchup of offensive play callers and coordinators is just, you got one guy who's finding his footing. He might be a great offensive coordinator someday, but Nick Caley's been under fire at various times this year in Houston, whereas Josh McDaniels, I mean, seen it all, as Brian Hoyer said, done it all, been in, like, he can cite playoff games with this exact matchup and what we're going to do and why we're going to do it and tell Drake May, and whereas Nick Caley, and that might be part of the C.J. Stroud regression or whatever's going
on
there.
Sure, it's a big part of it.
They're kind of finding their footing. So, yeah, I do think the Patriots have the better quarterback, but I think it's in part because they have the better coordinator right now.
Oh, yeah. Andy, Nick Caley has now been an offensive coordinator for a playoff game.
Yep.
Josh McDaniels has coordinated in 29 playoff games, like literally two NFL seasons worth of experience.
A little bit of a mismatch, but mismatch, and there might be a mismatch in the Texans' direction, which obviously would be that defensive front, right?
Yep.
That pass rush against your offensive line. But we did talk to Mark Schlereth, Odyssey NFL Insider, earlier in the show, so we asked him for a prediction in this game, and, well, he hemmed and hawed a little.
What's our last game that I'm missing?
Yeah, you might know Houston and New England Sunday.
Oh, Houston, yeah, Houston, you guys. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I'll take just because I love you guys so much. I'll take Houston 45-10.
Oh, I'm just
busted balls. I think it'll be close. Listen, man, I don't think. I think this defense is really good. This Houston defense is, as you guys know, I think it's the best in football. But man, I'm concerned about the way CJ Stroud has played. And I'm concerned about that offense. I'll take just because I love you guys, I'm going to take New England in a tight one. I'm going to call it 17-16 New England.
Ted, do you think he wanted to pick the Patriots? Sounded like the other way.
No. I think he did.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, he does radio in Boston every week up here. Yeah. I think he did.
I think he wanted to pick Houston.
Well, but is that the only reason he wanted to pick the Patriots?
Yes.
Did he believe the Patriots are going to win the football game?
No.
Okay.
I do not think he believes. I think he sees that defense and what that defense can do to people. That defense did it to Aaron Rodgers. I watched him do it a couple weeks ago to Justin Herbert, the guy you just did it to. They had him running for his life, feeling bad, all those things. Drake May, Josh McDaniels, I have a lot of faith in you guys. If you get this done, I'll have even more faith in you a week from now. Absolutely.
The Texans defense has faced 10 or 8 top 10 offenses this year.
Mm.
And so they're used to going up against really good offenses.
And
that scares me.
Despite facing those, they finished 16 points allowed, was like one of the better seasons in the last decade plus. So, so you can't say they didn't face anybody. No, they faced them. And they won those battles with good offenses. And you're a good offense, Drake May. You're a good offense, Josh McDaniels. But you got a challenge. Dan Ball?
And there's something about it specifically being Mark Schlereth giving that opinion that worries me. A guy that played guard who famously a couple weeks ago was like, quarterbacks, they're soft. They don't actually have to work hard with what they do. Him looking at that Texans pass rush and being as worried for the Patriots as he was or was trying to dance around worries me even more than, say, if I heard that from Hoyer or Schefter or Curran or somebody else.
And
I just think about the raw strength of Danielle Hunter or Will Anderson against Will Campbell. Like, they might be turnstiles or not even just sandbags or just tackling dummies they go around.
Yeah, it's there, and we're going to delve into this as the week goes on, and we'll hear them start to talk about it. Drake May will have his press conference, and Mike Vrabel and Josh McDaniels will talk to all those guys. But this is a really, I said it last week, you get into these old strength versus strength matchups, but then weakness versus weakness. And I really feel like they beat the Chargers because you won the weakness versus weakness game. Their offensive line wasn't very good. You supposedly don't have a great pass rush, and you won that battle. Your pass rush dominated their weaker offensive line.
Yeah, and Andy, I would like to remind you that that one of the big themes of the week, of course, is the exes that live in Texas, the expats factor from Caserio on down. There's a lot of former New England Patriot on their offensive line. Two of their five starters, sometimes three, depending on the situation. Jake Andrews, City So, Trent Brown. Come on now, Harold Landry. Let's go, Clavon Chase on. Like, let's get after it, boys.
Yep, we're going to get into some of those connections and the Patriots South that still exists under Nick Caserio up next on the docket here. But we did talk to Brian Hoyer, and we finally fleshed it out that that whole ending you saw to the documentary, Apple TV, Robert talking about how Bill, the game plan against the Rams kind of reinvigorated his belief in him. It was all poppycock. It was all Brian Hoyer, and we asked him about it.
Fiction.
No, fact.
No. Those guys, the one thing, it's hard when you're the backup quarterback because you're the one guy who doesn't step on the field, right? Even the other guys, like special teams, all of those things. The story goes, I was sitting there, and it's Tuesday. You have to have an off day. I'm sitting there in Atlanta, and I'm just scrolling through, and I saw this docuseries that the Rams had done that year. It was kind of like a Hard Knocks, but internally. And a lot of the terminology, I was like, well, I know that play. I know that formation. I know that. I'm like, this is the same offense that I ran in San Francisco. So I felt very confident in what my knowledge of what they were going to do was. And so when I was with Kyle Shanahan, a lot of times he would get into formation, get to the ball, see the defense, and then call the play in. Well, it cuts off at 15 seconds. So if you change after that, now all of a sudden they called the wrong play into the wrong coverage. Mm-hmm. But look, those guys went out and executed and did it. It was a phenomenal game defensively.
No. Please, Brian, you can phrase it however you want. You gave them the answer to the test.
Yeah.
Basically, mm-hmm. he hand spoons what he needs the quarterback to do up to a certain point, and then the clock changed. They can't talk to his quarterback anymore, so the defense can change what they show, and it had them all befuddled, man.
Yep. This actually reminded me of the Waterboy when Henry Winkler, the coach, loses his notebook and he doesn't know what to do. You basically took the notebook away from Jared Goff, and he suddenly is out there.
Yep.
And Fitzy, how many touchdowns did he score?
Zero. I think it was two less than two, so zero.
Yeah, zero. Yeah, yep. He got three points. We were talking about a super. Now, to be fair, I don't know what the Rams were doing to Tom Brady because it was a pretty low-scoring Super Bowl overall. It was a punter's battle.
Can we real quick, I referenced that Super Bowl to this last game. I thought it was a compelling game.
Oh, yeah.
I'm getting texts from my family and friends the whole game. This game's boring. This game sucks. I'm like, it's compelling because it's a one-score game for the most of the game. In one play, one missed tackle, one mistake could be the difference in winning or losing that game.
You sound like a soccer fan trying to tell me why soccer's awesome, too. I'm telling you, you're 90 minutes, you're on the edge of your seat because any goal is the game-winning goal kind of thing. I was a little – I didn't love the way the game played, just like that Super Bowl I didn't love. But it was very similar, right down to the fact we talked about this, Fitzy and I, yesterday. The deep ball to the tight end. Now, Hunter Henry scored in the Super Bowl. Gronk catches it down to like the two, and then Sony Michel punches it in. But there were a lot of similarities between these games and the style of the games and everything that played out. All right, speaking of things playing out. So we had a three-point stance today. And I say that factually. We had a three-point stance today because I gave my opinion. And Stiz, we have this audio. Let's play the nice Jacksonville lady again and see what ignited just a brouhaha here on the show.
I just want to tell you congratulations on your success, young man.
Thank you.
You hold your head up, all right? You guys have had a most magnificent season.
Thank you.
And you did a great job out there today.
Appreciate
so you just hold your head up, okay?
Thanks,
and ladies
ma'am.
And gentlemen, Duval, you the one, all
Thank
right?
You, ma'am.
You keep it going. We got another season, okay?
I appreciate
Take
it.
Take care and much continued success to you and the entire team.
Thank you, ma'am.
That wasn't a post-game presser, was it?
It was.
Fan fest.
No, yeah, that was
Jaguars fan fest.
That was a post-game press conference shortly after a playoff loss where Lynn Jones, I believe her name was, Jacksonville Free Press, very nice woman, very nice message, just shouldn't be delivering it in that situation. And he did not have a great season because Adam Schefter told me you have to win in the playoffs to have a great season, even though Adam Schefter retweeted said post-game comment from Lynn Jones and said it was awesome. We got into a big fight. I think we landed on Stiz. You think I'm a big bully jerk because I think that was the wrong place, wrong time.
I think all you people giving this poor woman guff, what would Trump say?
Losers.
That's all.
And
bunch
I'm
of
not,
herbs.
I've never spoken with the woman. I can't actually give her like guff personally. I just, it's Fitzy, and I know you're on that side of the aisle as well, so to speak, mm-hmm. where you think post-game press conferences should now just be open mic night. Just tell,
no,
do whatever you want to do when you get the mic. Tell a joke.
You're trying to paint me into a corner and color it a certain way and go back on that, you jerk. No, I just, I'm giving her a mulligan. I think she did something out of humanity. I think she did. She couldn't help herself. I said she was compelled. There was something maternal in her that forced her to want to tell that man, don't feel bad about yourself, because she probably saw like through his glassy eyes, a little window to the soul, that he was broken. Like, it was devastating to him. And she gave him a hug with words. And you know what? She'll get chided for it for all eternity. And the congratulatory society of football hardos can come down on her all they want. But I'm okay with it.
Well, if she's right and he was that broken, then they need to find a new football coach. Because if he's that broken just because he lost a playoff game in his first season, then he's like Mac Jones. He's breakable. He's fragile. He's not the man you think he's going to be. Because that should be a moment that propels him forward, right? Like the trials, the tribulations. Ted, you and I are big on a lot of social media motivational things.
Oh, yeah.
If he was that broken in that situation that he needs this nice woman to like prop that him top. Up.
And then she saved him.
He is
she
not.
She saved him.
He's not the leader of men that they need in Jacksonville. They need to move on and find a new coach. If that was
you
death and darkness.
If you don't hear that stick. And just see, the first thing you don't think is if that's inappropriate.
Yeah.
Then if that's the new appropriate, then there are no more rules. There's no more anything. Forget it. Do whatever you want.
All right. So we fought about that enough. We got to squeeze in a couple phone calls because we actually had Mark, who's been waiting 24 hours to talk to us. Mark, what's up?
What's going on, my brothers?
What's up, Mark?
What's up, buddy?
Well, we got a problem on the left side of the line, and it is not going to get any better, especially this Sunday, come 3 o'clock. I mean, Ben Brown, I think, needs to go in at left guard. And as much as it pains me to say this, I would even try Vedarian Lowe at left tackle because he actually has long arms and might be able to be a little better than Will Campbell. Because
thanks for the call, Mark. You waited 24 yep. hours for that. You want to bench both rookies?
Ain't happening.
You want to bench the guy who PFF both? Said had the best grade of any Patriot on Sunday?
So people know what you're talking about. Yeah, Will Campbell got the best grade.
It's stupid.
Maybe that shows you how
kidding
bad.
Me?
No, he did.
No, he did.
You know what, Andy? Consider today is the
of
day.
Of all the linemen. Yep.
We did not get along on the reporter thing. I am now, please save me a seat and PFF can go to hell.
Yeah. But no,
or that's just an example of how bad the entire offensive line
was. Well, I like them French fried potatoes.
Ted, Fitzy and I talked about this yesterday, and we had a legitimate consideration for benching Jared Wilson, that Ben Brown is better. Would you put Ben Brown in to start against the Texans?
You can't do that. And you know why? Because it would go against everything Vrabes has done all season long, and that is basically support the guys. They make mistakes. You have a penalty. You fumble the ball. You don't get basically sent to Siberia like it used to be around here. So he's it's a different style. It's what was the term I used?
Growth mentality.
Growth mentality. It's the growth mm-hmm. mentality. You learn from your mistakes. You don't beat guys down. So that is there's no way those guys are getting benched on the left side. No way.
Text line says that Les Call was an idiot. Let's go back to the phone calls. Let's go to Chris in Milford. What's up, Chris?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Just real quick, to be the best, you're going to beat the best.
Woo!
I don't know why we're scared of this Houston Texans team. Yeah, they got a nasty defense, but guess what? If we're going to get to where we're going, we got to face teams like this head on and take care of business. So let's stop being afraid of this defense. Their offense sucks. Let's go out this week and take care of business to the next step.
Well said, Chris. Yeah. I like the pep rally. And it made me think, Ted, if you were doing radio, mm-hmm. so we're talking about the offensive line. Is it that good? Is it good enough? If you were doing radio back in your day, mm-hmm. back in Houston,
yeah,
you guys would be taking phone calls questioning the quarterback and the turnovers
no
and how he's
no
playing.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd be worried oh, yeah. about the quarterback, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So let's not pretend that, yes, the defense is really good in Houston, but they have their own warts or angst mm-hmm. or whatever you want to call it there. So this is an even battle mm-hmm. where teams have strengths and weaknesses. But Fitzy, what did I say weeks ago? All these teams have a little sucky to them.
That's right. We had 12 teams on Wild Card Weekend, so we had 12 different suckies. Now we have only 8 teams left, and yet 8 suckies. Who's sucky will be suckiest this weekend?
That's what we're going to find out this weekend and moving forward in the postseason. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, Fitzy just touched on it. There's a lot of connections between the Patriots and the Texans. And not just that Ted Johnson played for the Patriots and covered both teams. Nick Caserio, others, the whole organization, the coaching staff. We'll talk about some of those connections and whether that will have any impact at all on the game that's played Sunday night between Mike Vrabel's team and DeMeco Ryan's team. That's next here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, for the final time, Dan Ball, what's trending?